David, I've let me see. I heard you on Counterspin,
right?
Discussing something called the media blackout. It sounded pretty interesting. And I saw on your website you had a few stories about it. Why don't you tell us about this? Is it an ongoing project, or?
It is. We're publishing an article or a report every 2 weeks, and we've published 4 of them thus far. And what we're doing is looking at failures in the mainstream, or so-called mainstream media, to cover issues that are of importance to workers or to the labor movement. And there seems to be an endless array of important issues that are either avoided entirely or are misrepresented and marginalized. And, you know, a good example and the most recent article is the issue of the taking away of the right to overtime pay. A couple of weeks ago, I believe it was August 23rd, the Bush administration Department of Labor put through changes, finally, after preparing for them for many months, that effectively strip at least 6 million Americans of the right to time and a half pay when they work over 40 hours. And it was very well known where the Department of Labor was coming from. They had put out in their initial proposal advice to employers on how to avoid paying your workers overtime. I mean, it was quite evident to anyone paying attention what their purpose was. And yet they claimed that their changes would benefit 1.3 million workers rather than taking rights away from any workers. And you know, that was true as far as it went, because they made an adjustment for inflation that hadn't been made for many years that guarantees overtime pay to workers below a certain salary level. But they made various other complicated changes to various types of employment that changed who counts as a manager or an executive and therefore has no right to overtime pay, to the point where, for example, someone who's spending most of their time flipping burgers but is also an assistant manager in a fast food restaurant with some sort of supervision over 2 other burger flippers no longer can demand time and a half pay for overtime. And, you know, this is the 6 million figure is conservative, but it was arrived at by the Economic Policy Institute, and similar findings were arrived at by top officials from the Departments of Labor under Reagan, Bush, and Clinton, various other experts and economists and organizations that testified in congressional hearings. And there were bills in Congress, and there still are, and there's been a bill now passed in both houses attempting to protect any workers from losing the right to overtime pay, and which incidentally President Bush has promised to veto any bill that includes that protection of overtime pay for workers. And so it was clear to anyone doing any research what was going on. Yet every article that came out in the newspapers was to the effect of the Department of Labor claims workers are going to benefit. The Department of Labor states that workers are going to benefit. These labor groups claim otherwise.
Oh.
And so it was always a little bit more deference to the government, despite the fact that it's blatant lies. And despite the fact that the Bush administration has built up a solid reputation for lying, and so you had this he said, she said article where the reader is left without any clue what to believe. And the headlines for a lot of these articles were along the lines of changes to overtime rules confuse everyone. So that, you know, there were no headlines to the effect of Bush administration puts through biggest pay cut in U.S. history, which would have been a more accurate summary of what happened. And, you know, even, and you saw columns from reporters at some of these same papers who obviously knew what was going on and said so in a column. You saw an editorial from the New York Times that said, we recognize who's telling the truth here and this is a disgrace. But in the article in the New York Times, there was no such conclusion. There was simply, he says this, she says that, who knows?
Where was that article placed in the paper?
The article, I don't know what page it was on, but it was not a front page story. It was by Stephen Greenhouse, who's the labor reporter, or they call him a labor reporter at the New York Times, and you know, he's an intelligent guy. He obviously, I have no doubt that he knew in his own mind what was going on, but the journalistic ethics requires that the reporter not draw any conclusions and not report for the benefit of the public, but simply transcribe the opinions of two opposing parties, regardless of whether one of them is credible or not. And so that's the way he wrote it, or that's the way his editors required him to write it. And that's what people look to as news. And the broadcast media was far worse. You know, there was a big rally with hundreds of workers outside the Department of Labor, a couple of U.S. senators speaking, and all the cameras picked it up. But then they showed the rally without showing any substantive speeches and immediately went to the Department of Labor's point of view. So the rally became an opportunity to again present lies from the Bush administration. And so to this day, you know, many, many Americans have no idea that the right to time and a half pay for overtime has been significantly reduced and eliminated for many workers. Just as millions of Americans believe that Iraq caused 9/11, you know, the public is badly informed, and the media needs to take some responsibility for that. So we're trying to build up the labor media, but we're also trying to offer a critique of what's wrong with the corporate media.
Oh yeah, and right there, you mentioned, I believe, about two or three different tactics, such as the headline, the he said, she said, and so on and so forth. Could you apply any of those tactics to some of your other media blackout stories? Is that a common strategy in the mainstream media?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of balance is sort of the primary ethic in corporate journalism, and it's always balanced between two acceptable positions. So if there's another position that's further along the spectrum that the editors don't want in, it's simply shut out. And, you know, there have been endless stories about the war in Iraq, and there have been endless stories about the presidential campaign and the presidential candidate's views on Iraq. But we have had some of the largest labor unions in the country and some of the largest labor organizations in the country. I'm talking about AFSCME and the SEIU, the Service Employees Union, the California Federation of Labor, the Longshore and Warehouse Union, the Postal Workers Union. These unions have all taken a strong position demanding that the troops be brought home from Iraq. And this is news. This is a drastic change from what the labor movement has done during past wars, including the war in Vietnam. The labor movement has tended to support wars and to support them for much longer than this war has gone on. And you now have a significant percentage of the labor movement opposing this war, demanding that it end, and it's not a story at all. It's not that it's misreported. It's not that it's covered in the wrong way. It can't be found. It cannot be found in broadcast media or in newspapers or magazines. And the conventions at which these resolutions were passed were covered by the mainstream media. There were articles from the Associated Press and other sources reporting on the events at these conventions. So it's not that the media doesn't know. It's that this doesn't fit within what it's reasonable to cover. And, you know, during the primary campaigns, I served as the press secretary for a campaign called Dennis Kucinich for President.
Oh, yes, I voted for him.
You did. Thank you. We appreciate it.
It was that effective press that
did
it. Yeah,
the man who cannot win. You know, I mean, within 2 weeks of him entering the race, the New York Times was asking him to get out and reporting that he had no chance. I'm sorry?
It's kind of a maybe not self-fulfilling prophecy, but if the New York Times says you have no chance, that pretty well...
No, that's exactly right. The New York Times believes it has no effect on the external world that it merely comments on, but it has a tremendous effect. And we saw the broadcast media follow along and give literally hundreds of times the coverage to some of the candidates as it gave to others. And this was before there was any distinction in terms of money, in terms of polls, or in terms of celebrity endorsements, which are the three excuses that would all be brought out over and over again toward the end of the campaign for shutting out candidates. So you had articles written on issues such as the war or health care or trade that gave the balanced presentation of the opposing views from the six acceptable candidates and left out the point of view of the other three candidates or four candidates. And so you had something like universal health care, meaning a system like that used in every other wealthy democracy in the world that would actually cost us less money but provide everyone with complete health care, completely pushed off the table. And along with it, you know, a third of the candidates in the race. And so you had a balanced article, an objective article, an article that pretended to take no opinions and no points of view. And yet, because all of the candidates with a significantly different point of view were mentioned in the last paragraph as also existing, the debate was narrowed. And so, you know, I was at a forum yesterday with the editor of Reason magazine, this libertarian magazine, and this guy was arguing that we have an incredibly diverse media and that any story that gets buried by one media outlet is immediately published by all the others because that's competition and that's the way the market works. And I spoke with him and I told him that he was right as far as the stories he was talking about, celebrity scandals, pedophilia at Disney World that the Disney Corporation didn't report, but the other cable channels immediately reported. You know, that's right. But when it comes to substantive political topics, you know, what it would actually mean to people to elect this candidate or that candidate, it's absolutely false. The entire corporate media structure eliminates those stories.
Well, yeah, I understand that that's a basic fallacy that libertarians have, that, you know, somehow the Nation magazine competes with Time. You know,
right,
or
right.
That, you know, that organizations are the same as individuals and there's no power differential.
Right.
So they should have individual rights. But anyway, that's my little bit of editorializing there. And Dave, we're getting about to the end of our time. So if you could tell people where they can find the stories that you have mentioned and other ones that have been blacked out by the mainstream media.
Yeah, just go to ilcaonline.org, and look on the left-hand side where it says a media blackout, and click there, and you will find these articles about the media's treatment of stories that are important to workers in this country. and you will find as well on the website articles from labor magazines and labor newspapers reporting this news that you can't find anywhere else.
Oh, okay, David. That's. I'd like to thank you very much for taking some time for one definitely non-mainstream medium here.
Yeah, absolutely.
WFT and the Illinois Labor Hour.